Elizabeth Elliot says, "I believe there is such a thing as self-esteem and self-image, but I do not think that it is something that you and I ought to be paying much attention to. Life is too short for that, as far as I'm concerned." Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of author and teacher Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, talking with you this time about virginity. I had lunch just last week with a man who had lived a very promiscuous sexual life. He described himself to us and the others who were at the table as addicted to sex. And when he became a Christian, he began to realize that all of that had to go. And he was sure that it was an impossibility, because after all, an addiction is an addiction. And you have to go through years of treatment and therapy and withdrawal and goodness knows what else in order to get over addictions, don't you? And yet he believed that God could deliver him from this. But he prayed, "Lord, I don't know how I'm going to quit this." And then he told me what happened next, which was a corroboration of something that I said just last week, I think, that the guardian of chastity is love. This young man told me that he was in church one day, and he said, just as he came back from the communion, he said, "I sat down in my seat, and I was so overwhelmed with the sense of the love of God." He said it was almost an ecstatic experience. He said it was almost unimaginably thrilling and exciting to be overwhelmed with the love of God in such a way that, he said, it was just as if God said to me, "This is the answer to your question." His question, "Lord, how am I going to quit this?" And he said, and I was like, Oh, so this is how. The love of God, the guardian of chastity, is love. First of all, you've got to have the expulsive power of a new affection. He had loved himself in all of that sexual indulgence and addiction. He had not been loving the women that he was using in that way. But now, that kind of love, which was anything but love, it was a travesty, it was a hollow mockery, a screaming farce of what love is supposed to be. But now that has been expelled by a new affection, the love of God. And God had so revealed himself and so overwhelmed this young man sitting there in the pew with the knowledge of his love that he saw it as the answer to his question. Oh, so this is how I'm going to quit. By loving you. By accepting your love for me. And of course, if in your imagination you love that person that God may give you as a partner in marriage someday, surely you would guard your chastity for love of that person. Neil Bennett of Yale University did some studies in premarital cohabitation and subsequent marital stability. He discovered that the divorce rate is 80% higher among couples who have lived together before marriage than couples who have not lived together. And so the results indicate not that cohabitation causes higher divorce rates, but rather that people who cohabit are less committed to traditional institutions, more committed to individualism and pure selfishness. Christians ought to be people who are more committed to Christ and less committed to self. This is a lifetime process, though, isn't it? Every day, you and I have to make choices between Christ and self, between doing something for somebody else and doing something for ourselves. But speaking of this matter of virginity, let me encourage you that God does answer prayer for grace and help. We have this young man's testimony as one case in point. But God's help doesn't mean that he's going to do it all. Just as I've tried to say about God's help in all areas of discipline, God expects you to do what you can do, and then God's grace goes to work on what you can't do. If this man was truly addicted to sex, then he needed help in overcoming it. But, and here's the big but, you must use all means at your disposal. Don't forget that the means at your disposal are also from God. Don't forget that you must draw a line. And this raises a very controversial question. Where do you draw the line? Well, let me ask a question before that. When do you draw the line? If it's necessary to draw some kind of a line, when do you draw it? Well, let me read to you from Romans 13. Verse 11, Paul says, "Why all this stress on behavior? Because, as I think you have realized, the present time is of the highest importance. It's time to wake up to reality. Every day brings God's salvation nearer. The night is nearly over, the day has almost dawned. Let us therefore fling away the things that men do in the dark. Let us arm ourselves for the fight of the day. Let us live cleanly, as in the daylight, not in the delights of getting drunk or playing with sex, nor yet in quarreling or jealousies. Let us be Christ's men and women from head to foot, and give no chances to the flesh to have its fling." Now, right there, you can see that there are some things that you and I have to do. Fling away the things that men do in the dark. Arm ourselves for the fight. Live cleanly. Get rid of the delights of getting drunk and playing with sex and quarreling and jealousies, and give no chances to the flesh to have its fling. My answer to the question, when do you draw the line, is right now, today. Sit yourself down, take yourself by the scruff of the neck, and say, look, are you serious about this business of sexual purity? Okay, let's draw some lines right now. Well, then the big question, where do you draw it? And don't sit there with bated breath thinking that Elizabeth Elliot is going to outline for you exactly what you can touch and what you can't touch. Can you hold hands? Can you hold two hands at once? Can you squeeze hands? Can you play with fingers? I'm not going to tell you that. What I'm going to do is ask you some questions. Think of these questions. Give yourself an answer. Is this behavior indicative of your feelings? Is it indicative of self-gratification? In other words, are you most interested in pleasing yourself or pleasing the other person or pleasing God? Is this behavior indicative of your convictions? Is it God-directed, that is, to please Him? Is this behavior indicative of your intentions for the good of the other person? Is it appropriate where a proposal is not yet appropriate? Are you prepared to present your case to the Lord, whose you are and whom you serve? And lastly, what are you doing with the body which you have offered to Christ as a living sacrifice? Do you think of that body as still your own property? Is the body of that man or that woman that you are so eager to touch your property? Not unless you are committed to marriage. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 9, we read this, speaking of men who set their hearts on being wealthy, I think it also applies to men who set their hearts on anything short of God himself. They fall into the world's traps and lay themselves open to all sorts of silly and wicked desires, which are quite capable of utterly ruining and destroying their souls. Isn't that true in the sexual area as well as in money? And Paul's advice to this young man, Timothy, in 2 Timothy 2:22, is turn your back on the turbulent desires of youth and give your positive attention to goodness, faith, love, and peace in company with all those who approach God in sincerity. Turn your back. That's something that you can do, isn't it? God is not going to do that for you. In another place, he tells the young man to run, to flee from youthful lusts and temptations. Don't let yourself get into that kind of a position. Draw a line now, not when you get in the back seat of a car. Where do you draw it? Well, you decide after answering the questions that I've suggested. God bless you.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Discipline, The Glad Surrender, and No Graven Image. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.